Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, February 10th, 2015. And with me today, I'm actually really excited because you guys are both so smart, and it's always so awesome to have both of you here. John Martellaro, how are you, John?
Good morning, TDO.
Ah, that was sweet. And Dave Hamilton, how are you, Dave?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
It's like I said, it's great to have both of you here. Yeah, and especially because the topics that I want to hit today, I think both of you will have some really great insight. And so I thought we could start with the news that Tim Cook is going to be speaking at a cybersecurity summit that the White House is hosting at Stanford, and that's going to be this Friday. Now, just to fill people in on exactly what this summit is supposed to be, we don't know all the details, but what we do know right now is that it's supposed to be this event where you have industry executives like Apple CEO Tim Cook, and then you have experts from the educational side of cybersecurity, and then you have government officials, and put everyone together and talk about ways that companies can get sensitive information to the government.
There's an essential tension going on here as we've seen it evolve. Apple has arranged things so that they don't have to be the gatekeeper. They no longer keep certain encryption keys. Apple has to ensure the privacy of the customer. And what's basically going on here is that there's this tension between the government's need to get certain information when they need it and the respectability and the trustworthiness of American corporations being able to sell their products all over the world. We've already seen the Chinese raise some questions about demanding a backdoor into iOS and so on. So this is a natural evolution of technology. And I see this as sort of a turning point where people are getting down and saying, okay, let's really address this issue and try to solve the problem for both parties.
That, you bring up an interesting point, John, an angle that I had not thought about before. Thus far, I'd been thinking about it from an us versus them. And by us, I mean responsible technology companies and consumers versus them, governments who want the consumers' data. And you bring up an interesting angle to this that really it's us versus the technology companies and their relationship with the government. And we and the technology companies could go either way with this, right? If they all just said, yeah, okay, we'll happily give the government, you know, what the government asked for. They're asking for it. After all, we should give it to them. They're a responsible government. We as a people in general would be up in arms, at least in this country, about that, right? We would be flabbergasted if Apple said, well, of course, yeah, here's the keys. You can have whatever you want, right? That doesn't even compute for us. But it is a world that we could be living in.
Well, there's a difference between what you're making me think of is there's a difference between data mining and looking for trouble and presenting your case. If the government wants to have a routine backdoor into our systems, as Jeff mentioned in the article, that means that it's possible that the bad guys could get into our iPhones as well. So there's no choice but to have great security for the customer so that we can trust Apple to keep our data private. But if the government can make its case, instead of just saying, well, we want to kind of cruise around and do searching and look for trouble, if the government can say, well, look, you know, this guy was released from prisons 3 years ago. He served 15 years for armed robbery. You know, he's a known identity thief. We know what his phone is. We know where his phone is. We know his number. We need to get some information, and here's a court order. You know, I think Apple would be cool with that.
Well, what if – because what we're talking about here is the only thing that's really secured at this point is iMessages, right? I mean, that's super secure in that the keys are generated on the devices And the private keys, i.e. those that are required to unlock the incoming messages, don't exist on Apple servers, right? So
I think that applies to File Vault as well.
Oh, totally applies to File Vault. That's right.
And yes. I think your iCloud syncing of contacts and so on, isn't that encrypted too?
Well, not really, because you can see that data on the web, right? So that tells me that that Apple has the ability to decrypt it.
Maybe if during transmission, yeah.
It's encrypted SSL during transmission, sure. But anything you can view on the web server, and I'll add an asterisk there, because there are some ways of using plugins to do local decryption and that sort of thing. But in a general sense, anything you can view on the web is decryptable by the company running the website if they so choose. And that's why Facebook's Messenger is, you know, completely insecure, because they want you to be able to see it on the web. You'll note that iMessages are not viewable on the web. You must be running a special client to view them, either the Messages client on Mac or iOS. So, but what if, you know, they don't need a court order against Apple to come to my computer? They need a court order targeted at me to come to my computer or my iPhone and say, we're going to confiscate this device, and we know this device has your private keys in it, and we know where those keys live on your device, and so we are going to use this court order to not only seize your device, but then dig in to the appropriate places
and
decrypt.
That's the right way to do it.
And there's nothing stopping that from happening today. Right. So other than, like you said, Jeff, File Vault, if you come and grab my laptop from me and it's encrypted with File Vault and it's locked, you know, it's not unlocked and I'm not using it, then, you know, good luck getting the good luck decrypting that. You know,
well, I think NSA has, my guess, an educated guess, is the NSA has the ability with supercomputers to unlock a 256 AES.
Ah, man, I don't know about that. I see what you're going with it. I don't think they do.
There's a hierarchy. There's things the county governments can do.
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
things that the federal government can do, and there's things only NSA can do.
I think the NSA would like to be able to do that, and I'm sure they're working on it. Yeah. But I don't, from what I understand, I don't think they do. In fact, I've heard that they've been taking all the PGP encrypted email that passes through their hands that they cannot read, and simply archiving all of it
until their decryption technology is up to speed.
That's right.
The next generation.
So they're on the hunt for the next Alan Turing. Really?
Yeah.
Well, they're in the hunt for a 10 petaflop supercomputer.
Even then, man, I don't know. I mean, of course, you know, you can brute force your way into anything if you have the time, but and time gets shorter when you add CPU cycles. So yes, this is theoretically possible, but not with any tech that we know of or even close to today. So I don't think the NSA can do it. I think you've got to have the keys. And I think Apple's smart for not wanting to store the keys.
I agree.
Well, I mean, the whole U.S. computer tech industry seemed to be ready to drive off a cliff last fall. You know, when Germany's Angela Merkel raised a big fuss, and China raised a fuss, and it looked like, you know, the whole U.S. tech business was at risk not being able to sell anything.
Right.
So we got to get this straightened out.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer. What, I mean, other than exactly where we are now, what's the answer? What's the evolution of this, if any?
Well,
that may be more than we can answer here. It is a good question.
You
right?
and Jeff raised a good point earlier about, you know, the identifying individuals and putting the onus on them, and going after specific individuals with cause, you know, with a warrant. Well, as opposed to just sitting back and being lazy and, you know, collecting information. Because the NSA listens to a lot of stuff over radio frequencies, right? So they're accustomed to just picking stuff, cherry-picking stuff out of the air. And they'd like to be able to continue doing that in the smartphone universe. But the industry and the customers are saying, well, slow down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, to me, this is akin on some level to the government saying, all right, so we think that maybe John is up to no good. So we're going to call up Schlage and have them go to his house and unlock his door for us so we can just go in and look around. And that's not how it's supposed to be. There needs to be a process in place that protects us from unreasonable search and seizure. And I think the scenario we've already laid out where you go in and physically take the device that has the information you need and then figure out how to decrypt it, that's the way to go. Otherwise, we're just creating an open door for anyone to walk in.
So let me throw something out that I don't necessarily agree with. In fact, I'm pretty sure I don't. But in that scenario, the problem is if it's an iPhone, you can get at the data because the data on the iPhone is not stored in an encrypted form. The drive, if you will, is not encrypted. Some bits of data are, and therefore you would need the keys. But the iPhone tends to store those keys too, right, for this type of stuff. Mm-hmm. But on a MacBook Air, you've got File Vault running. The keys are there. Right now, assuming I'm right and the NSA doesn't have a way of getting into this or isn't willing to work with local governments to tip their hand that they have a way of getting into this, the only reasonable way that one would get in is if the owner of that device were compelled to share their keys.
Yes.
And that goes against the right we all have to not incriminate ourselves. But is there wiggle room there to compel people to, yeah, you've got to unlock this when we tell you you have to. And if there happens to be incriminating information on there, well, that's the whole point of why we're compelling you to unlock this. Again, I'm not advocating for this. I'm just saying that this is a potential path.
Isn't there that American judicial precedent that you can't be forced to divulge something that you know, right?
Yeah, that, absolutely.
We talked about that last fall about, right. I think, fingerprint, which is something publicly available. Wasn't there a court decision about that?
That's right.
Versus a password you know in your head. And the idea is that you're tortured until you divulge the 16-digit password.
That's right. Yeah, well, that's the way you'd hack a MacBook Air, right? Because chances are you're decryption key is locked. The weakest link in the chain is your login password, right? And so you hack that, and in you go.
And you go, right?
Yeah. And for most people, that certainly for mine, that would be the easiest way in. I wouldn't try to decrypt the 256K or 256-bit AES. I'd just go right after my stupid 4-character login password. So
yeah, that's exactly the way to go. Yeah. And, but then as far as compelling us to give up our passcodes, well, see, now we're back into that really murky area where is that okay or isn't it? And we have precedent where in some cases the government says, yes, it's okay to compel someone to give potentially incriminating evidence against themselves. And I'll use a DUI as a perfect example. Someone gets stopped for drinking too much. They fail the roadside maneuvers and they get arrested. And now they have to give a blood sample. They have no choice.
Right.
That blood sample is going to be taken from them. And that is evidence that is self-incriminating.
Yeah, but that's because a police officer observed your behavior. In the case of the internet, the mentality that's dangerous and you don't want to fall into is we have a right to your data because we suspect you of something. We haven't taken you to court. We haven't proved anything. We don't have any evidence yet, but your rights are gone because we suspect you of something, and that's a dangerous path.
Well, that's like what potentially happened. I followed the Silk Road trial with great interest because I was very curious as to how they figured out who the guy was that was running that website. And I actually firmly believe they got the right guy. There's very, very little question in my mind of that. How they found him was his own mistakes. He was lazy with operational security and made some stupid mistakes, like posting essentially questions about what he needed for Silk Road with his own personal Gmail. So therefore they're done, right? But how did they find and get into the server, which we know that the feds did? That's the big question that no one has answered. And yet all the information that they got from getting into that server, which then eventually did lead them to the guy, was all admissible and yet may very – in fact, based on everything I know, was almost certainly fruit of the poisonous tree, right? If they broke the law to get at that server, to even find that server because it was hidden in the Tor network –
then at that point, all the evidence is tainted.
It goes away, right? And that never came up. And the defense attorney sort of screwed that up in presenting that particular issue. The judge threw out that argument, which was the defense attorney's fault. So there'll probably be some sort of appeal based on that alone, But to your point, John, that's what we're saying is how far do you get to go? I mean, you can compel someone to give a blood test. Well, if we start learning how to do brain scans better and we can pull specific information out of people's heads, is that now going to be legal to pull someone's password out?
Yeah,
just because we have the tech to do it? No, we don't.
That's right. I mean, there comes a time when a rational, helpful government has to say, here are things we're going to decide not to do.
That's
instead of saying, we want it and we're going to use whatever force we need to get it because we think it's good.
That's right. Yeah, we don't have all the answers, but we certainly have a lot of questions. It's interesting.
Yes, we do. And what I'm hoping is that this Friday summit will turn out to be something that's productive and helps start us down a path where we're going the right direction.
Yeah, I hope everyone that goes to this walks into that conversation with an open mind. That's the best thing that can happen. And it's not, people from the government saying we must, and the tech people saying you can't, right?
Right.
That's not going to get us anywhere.
Yeah, if that's what happens, then they might as well not have the summit at all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Cooler heads would be a good thing here. So I'm
yes,
curious.
Indeed.
Well, Tim's pretty cool.
Yes, yeah. And I'm betting that whatever he says during his presentation will be insightful and compelling
and encrypted.
Encrypted. Yeah, yeah. It would be awesome to be able to see recordings of these presentations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, it would.
yes, it would. Hey, we are almost out of time, but before we go, I thought it would be great just to bring up the news that Samsung is considering leaving Japan, specifically Japan's smartphone market. They have not been able to get any meaningful penetration into that space, and they have not been able to compete with Apple at all in that market. Apple currently has 30% of Japan's smartphone market, and Samsung is in sixth place with, I believe, 4%, and that's declining. And so they're looking at leaving the country.
It's an interesting decision to make. Well, we've competed as long as we could. Now that Apple's making a large form factor phone, we have no other ideas as to how to compete here. So, sorry, we're throwing in the towel.
Which is pretty much what it looks like to me.
I don't know how else to interpret that.
Well, you know what I think is happening is I was thinking about an analogy the other day. You know, some company like Cuisinart comes out with a really, really good blender, and it's expensive. And some other companies say, well, you know, we think we can make money in that market. So they come out with a knockoff. And it even looks like the Cuisinart, but it doesn't have the same mechanical integrity and it costs half the price. There's always those people who are going to say, oh, I can't afford the good one. I think this cheap one is just as good. And Samsung is riding along on that mentality. I think it all started when they started attacking Apple fans for being enthusiasts in the line, because that sort of punctuated the tactical situation between the two. People love their iPhones. They recognize the quality. And for a while, there will be people who want imitations, copies, things like that. But eventually, they come around and realize they're being shortchanged. And they just finally get done with that, and they say, okay, I'm ready for the best. And I think that's sort of what's caused the tide to change slowly with Samsung.
Yeah.
That's my view.
Now, Samsung has a precedent for bailing on a market, and that market is Japan. They did that earlier, this century, when they decided that they just couldn't compete in the television market. So they just pulled out of Japan. And by doing so, it helped eliminate potential profit losses, and it helped protect their reputation as the number one global seller of televisions. And I'm betting their potential decision to leave Japan smartphone market is along the same lines. They don't want to continue losing money in that space, and if they're a very distant sixth place, then that looks bad for their overall reputation in the smartphone market. So pull out, pretend Japan doesn't exist, and move on.
You know, there's a tech chart of the day from Business Insider that shows the operating profit by OEM. And Apple's this blue line way at the top, and Samsung is 10 and heading right down towards Nokia, BlackBerry, Lenovo, HTC, and LG as making virtually no money of selling smartphones. And I think the headline was something like Apple's taking 93% of the profits in the smartphone industry.
Yep, that sounds right.
Yep.
Yeah. And so we may see Japan without Samsung smartphones very soon. And yet people will continue to buy their iPhones. How about that? And we are out of time. So, John, thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
And Dave, thank you for being here and being willing to throw out an occasional contrary opinion just to get us all thinking.
Well, you know, we got to think. That's the only – when it seems like you're at a roadblock, the best thing I find to do is to throw out an alternative that goes against everything you believe, and maybe somewhere in there is something you can hang on to that can work.
Sure. And if nothing else, it gets everyone really thinking about whatever the issue is.
If the truth were obvious, Dave, it'd be easy. We'd
That's
all know
right.
it right away.
Truth is, after all, poorly lit.
Yes, there you go. All right. Thanks, both of you, for joining me today. Thank you to all of our listeners for being here yet again. We will see everyone tomorrow.